from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, a virus that has devastated fish farms around the world has been found in wild salmon stocks in Canada. We have a wrap-up of the sane season in Southeast and the fur flies over sea lions. All that coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
Federal fisheries scientists plan to survey Pacific Northwest and Alaska waters to determine if a harmful European fish virus has spread here. This week, scientists in British Columbia announced they found the fish-killing virus in wild Pacific salmon for the first time. Northwest News Network correspondent Tom Bonsi reports.
The detection of the contagion in wild British Columbia sockeye comes as a surprise. Infectious salmon anemia is not harmful to humans, but the virus has previously inflicted heavy losses on Atlantic fish farms. The big unknown is how vulnerable wild Pacific salmon and herring are. The Western Fisheries Research Center lab in Seattle plans to investigate quickly, says microbiologist Jim Winton.
It could range from relatively severe to maybe not so severe, depending on the susceptibility of these stocks.
Some wild salmon advocates strongly suspect the disease was introduced to the North Pacific via farmed Atlantic salmon. They want saltwater salmon farms in Washington and British Columbia shut down while the outbreak is investigated. The BC salmon farm industry insists tests on their fish have found no signs of infection. I'm Tom Bonsi reporting.
Winton went on to say that the virus is serious enough that it needed to be reported to international authorities.
Well, this virus is known to be a significant pathogen for farmed Atlantic salmon, principally in northern Europe, Chile, and in eastern Canada and the United States, where it can cause significant losses. It's significant enough that it's listed by the World Organization for Animal Health as a notifiable disease. So the finding of a virus in a new geographic area and new species is cause for concern.
He said because of the nature of the virus, there's a chance it could mutate and become a greater threat.
This virus is a member of influenza virus family, orthomyxoviruses, and therefore changes very rapidly in response to new hosts. So it's very likely that this virus could adapt if given a chance. And so one of the questions will be, is it possible to contain it at this point? Is it possible to avoid further infection pressure, and is it likely that this will become more serious?
Winton says the virus has been tested on steelhead, chinook, chum, and coho in a level 3 biohazard containment lab, but it wasn't tested on sockeye, where the virus has been found in the wild. He said the other fish showed some resistance to both the European and Canadian strains and is cautiously optimistic that finding the virus in the wild will not be a total disaster for fish stocks.
Yes, I think so. On the other hand, you don't necessarily want to make assumptions about viruses based on present information as to what they can do in the future. Viruses jump hosts; they increase in virulence in some cases, and so I wouldn't take all of this to the bank. But currently, I think it's less likely that this is going to spread like wildfire through Pacific salmon stocks. But we do need to know where it is, and we do need to know its potential for such an event.
Once again, Jim Winton is a microbiologist with the Western Fisheries Research Center Lab in Seattle. Thanks to Northwest News Network's Tom Bonsi for his help with this story.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at www.msea.org or 907-747-3287.
The management of an endangered stock of Steller sea lions has pitted fishermen, politicians, and state officials against federal scientists. That was especially clear at a special traveling hearing on the issue held this week. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
When a congressional committee holds a hearing that asks, does the science support the decision in the title, their answer to the question is usually already implied. That was the case when the ranking Republicans on the House Natural Resources Committee gathered testimony on the management of Steller sea lions at a special traveling hearing held in Seattle. Chairman Doc Hastings of Washington State, Alaska Congressman Don Young, and the majority of their witnesses came down hard on the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's decision to close down two fisheries to protect an endangered stock of sea lions in the Western Aleutians. Here's Young.
You have no science. That's why you always lean on the term best science available.
And witness Doug Vincent Lang, the state of Alaska's endangered species coordinator.
The conclusion that fishing is affecting the Western stock is based on speculation, not hard facts.
Young set the tone for the hearing with his first question for NOAA Fisheries Director Eric Schwab.
Mr. Schwab, do you ever work in Washington, D.C.? Do you work in Washington, D.C.?
My office is based in Silver Spring. I spend a lot of time in Washington, D.C., yes, sir.
That explains how you learn how to dance. You guys are really good at that. I say, I've watched the administration come down time again, dance around an answer better than anybody I've ever seen. So congratulations.
The criticisms that followed were varied. Many of the witnesses emphasized that NOAA used only one indicator, fewer pups being born, to establish a link between commercial fishing and sea lion diet. When questioning Schwab and NOAA scientist Doug DeMaster, Representative Hastings indicated that he was less than impressed with the data used.
I guess I just have to ask it straightforward. Is it true that some of the assumptions on the stellar sea lion feeding behavior was based on just three juvenile males?
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, could I defer to Dr. DeMaster?
If he answers my question, yes.
I believe the total number was more like 13.
Oh, wow. 13, okay.
The economic impacts of the closures of the Aka mackerel and Pacific cod fisheries were also discussed. One fishing industry representative testified that companies working in the Western Aleutians had lost over $80 million. Randy Sukata, who is the president of Aliu Enterprise, said that the restrictions have had a ripple effect in ADAC and caused fuel prices to go up.
This is not just a matter of lost opportunity, but it's a matter of ability to heat homes.
In response, Representative Young suggested that ADAC ignore NOAA's policies entirely.
If I had any suggestions, probably don't follow them. It'll get you in trouble. Go catch the fish. Let the goddamn Navy come out and try to take you down, or NIMS.
Of the dozen who were called upon to testify, only one person who didn't work for NOAA actively came to the agency's defense. Michael Levine is an attorney for the conservation group Oceana. He commented that the Endangered Species Act requires NOAA to do anything in its power to boost the stellar sea lion population, regardless of the economic implications.
The law is absolutely clear. Fisheries cannot be authorized unless the National Marine Fisheries Service can ensure that they're not likely to cause jeopardy to stellar sea lions or adversely modify their critical habitat.
Despite the many calls at the hearing for changes to the sea lion management plan, it's unlikely that any action will be taken in the near future to lift the restrictions. The management debate will only reopen in earnest if a review by the Center for Independent Experts finds problems with NOAA's conclusions. The center has not yet initiated its study, and that process typically takes 6 months from its start. In Unalaska, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The group promoting a massive gold and copper prospect near the headwaters of Alaska's Bristol Bay plans to press on with its work in spite of the passage of an initiative aimed at stopping the Pebble Mine. Mike Heatwell, a spokesman for Pebble Limited Partnership, said Tuesday morning that the group hasn't decided whether to contest the narrow vote or seek a recount. Unofficial results released by the Lake and Peninsula Borough late Monday showed 284 and 246 against the initiative, which seeks to ban large-scale resource extraction activity, including mining. Pebble unsuccessfully sought to stop the vote, arguing the initiative was illegal. A judge put the case on hold until next month, and Heatwell says Pebble will press on with the legal challenge. The fall chum salmon opening in southern southeast earlier this month, for the most part, marked the end of the seining season for the panhandle this year. It looks like the 2011 seine fishery had a record value, with a combination of a big pink harvest in northern southeast, good chum catches in the south, and high prices all around. Matt Lichtenstein has more.
Fall dog or chum salmon fishing is not a huge part of the season, but it was exceptionally good this year. It took place in Southern Southeast Management District 2, where Scott Walker is Alaska Department of Fish and Game's area management biologist.
We've had kind of an extended fall fishery down here, kind of like how we used to have it back in the early 90s and late 80s. We had a very, very strong, very good run of return here to fall chums in Chomley Sound and actually in a couple of other areas. We had the opportunity to fish more than we fished and had a return probably as good as we've had for about 10 years.
Chomley Sound is off southeast Prince of Wales Island. According to Fish and Game's preliminary estimate, the fall harvest has yielded at least 85,000 chum, which is the biggest fall catch by far since 2004. There were some very strong summer chum runs in southern southeast as well. District 2, for example, had the biggest chum catch of any management area all season in the region. That helped make up for poor pink returns in southern southeast. In order to allow enough pink salmon to escape upstream to spawn the next generation, seiners in that area got a lot less fishing time. Walker says that served to boost chum escapement as well.
Several of our systems that were a bit weak for chums in years past had a very bumper crop this year, and so it's been beneficial for that. We built up our chum systems. Now, normally during the latter part of our summer season, we'd have seiners all along the eastern shore of Prince of Wales, and we'd be fishing fairly aggressively for pinks, and they would catch a good portion of those chums. This year, our fishing was probably half of a traditional year, and so a lot more chums made it by.
Chum salmon was more of a mixed bag for seiners in northern southeast this summer, where, for instance, the normally big returns to Hidden Falls Hatchery on eastern Baranoff Island came in far lower than expected. Region-wide, seiners landed an estimated 6.8 million chum, according to preliminary totals. Meanwhile, seine-caught pinks totaled nearly 57 million fish region-wide, most of which came from northern southeast. The pink harvest was far above the 10-year average, and so were prices for most species. Bill Davidson is the state's regional management biologist.
The pink season was a big success, and the numbers came in close to or a little bit above what we had forecast going into the season, and prices were unusually strong this year, and so people did well at harvesting. The fish were nice size, and the harvest was quite valuable.
Davidson estimates that the entire seine catch for all species was worth a record $135 million this year, and the all-gear salmon catch for all species in southeast was worth nearly $200 million. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
As we went to press with the Alaska Fisheries Report this week, the Alaska House Special Committee on Fisheries was convening a hearing on salmon management in the Arctic Yukon-Kuskokwim region. It was led by Representative Steve Thompson of Fairbanks and Bob Heron of Bethel. Over the past 10 years, there have been serious declines in the salmon returns to western Alaska, which has led to severe restrictions on commercial and subsistence fisheries, as well as state and federal disaster declarations. The group, which included House and Senate legislators from the AYK region, were to hear from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, village councils, and commercial and subsistence fishermen. On the agenda was an overview of management and funding for salmon fisheries, community involvement in management decisions, and local input regarding policies and management issues. We'll have more from the meeting on next week's show.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org. And by
commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Northwest News Network's Tom Bonsi in Seattle, AUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, and KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.